Welcome to the Just Pod, a podcast by the Criminal Justice Section of the ABA, the unified voice of criminal justice. Welcome to this episode of the Just Pod. Today, we're doing a special episode in speaking to the opportunities for members within the Criminal Justice Section to help you get more out of your membership and make sure you know about all the great opportunities that are within the section for you to move forward work that you're really interested in and passionate about, writing opportunities, opportunities to speak with media, committee work, and all of that, and some fellowships. So I have invited a couple of our staff members from the Criminal Justice Section staff. And then we also have one of our members who is our graduating fellow moving into the role of co-chair for a couple of our committees. So let me introduce them. We have Faraz Mohammadi returning to the podcast today. Faraz is an assistant United States attorney in the Orange County, California area. And as I said, is one of our graduating fellows from our Diversity and Inclusion Fellowship, and is moving into the role of co-chair for our Diversity and Inclusion Committee, and then also our LGBTQ committee. So Faraz is certainly the model here, and he's going to talk to us about the fellowship later. And then we have Linda Britton, who is the CJS Standards Director, and is going to be speaking to us about policy opportunities. And Kyosu is the Technology and Publications Manager, and is going to be speaking to us about publications and opportunities there. So Kyo, let's start with you. Would you just take a few moments and tell our listeners about the many opportunities, you know, for members within the Criminal Justice Section to contribute to both the newsletter, to the CJ Magazine, and how they go about doing that, or even, you know, if they're interested in publication for a book?
Yes, the section offers various avenues of publication opportunities, various periodicals and books. On periodical side, we have the Criminal Justice Magazine, which is a renowned flagship periodical, quarterly magazine filled with peer-reviewed practical articles on a wide variety of criminal law topics with in-depth perspectives on cutting-edge legal issues and recent developments. We also have a Criminal Justice Section newsletter, which is published 3 times a year. It features practice tips, section, committee, project, task force, news and updates, book reviews, and ethics and professionalism articles. And we also have several committee newsletters, such as the White Collar Crime Committee newsletter and International Criminal Law newsletter. On the book side, we offer publishing opportunities on various topics of criminal justice field. We also have an annual book called The State of Criminal Justice, which examines and reports on the major issues, trends, and significant changes in the criminal justice system in a given year, from juvenile justice to international law to white-collar crime. And we also ask the committee to input that submitting chapters of their respective field for this annual publication. So you can check out the section website or contact me directly, Kyoso, for more information on publishing opportunities and submission guidelines of these various periodicals and books. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Kyo. And that is a great example, you know, talking about publications of books. That is something that you can do within a committee. So we have a couple of staff members that support committees. They weren't able to join us today, but let me just share some of the things that you can do within a committee. It's a great way to build your network of people that are focused in the same area as you are. As Linda will speak to, it is one of the places where you can work on organizing policy that you would like the ABA to lobby on behalf of, and I'll leave that to Linda to describe in more detail. And sometimes our committees have put forward books. A couple of committees that I can think of that have recently published are the Mental Health Committee and also the Prosecution Function Committee. They put forward one that we talked about on this podcast called Can They Do That? Understanding Prosecutorial Discretion. So a lot of great opportunities. And committees also put together webinars and also a lot of the CLE programming that we enjoy at our meetings, at our in-person meetings. So there's also a specific committee, and this is why we've invited Faraz here today. Faraz is going to be the co-chair of the Diversity and Inclusion Committee, and it is one of our graduating fellows. So that is actually going to be opening up for new fellows soon. So Faraz is going to tell us about that. So Faraz, let me turn the time over to you now.
Thank you, Emily. I'd like to start by talking about what the Diversity and Inclusion Fellowship Program, the purpose of it. And the purpose of the program is really to introduce attorneys with diverse backgrounds working in the criminal justice field to the work of the criminal justice section and to actually prepare them to take on leadership roles in the section. I actually will be graduating from the fellowship program this year. I started in 2019. The section was nice enough to let me continue on for an additional year given the pandemic. And I can just tell you that over the last couple of years, being part of the fellowship has been such an enriching experience. I've had the opportunity to meet with professionals working across the criminal justice field, from other prosecutors to public defenders and defense counsel, judges, academics, the list goes on. And you really get, as a fellow, a front row seat to the advocacy work that the section does, and you get to actively be involved in that advocacy. So what is expected of a fellow? What does a fellow do in the program? Well, as you mentioned, Emily, when you come in as a fellow, you actually are appointed and sit on the Diversity and Inclusion Committee, and you also are given the opportunity to join another subcommittee of the section. You're assigned a mentor within the section, and you're also assigned a committee project, or you can volunteer for a committee project. And these are really designed to further the goals of the section, and they include, you know, organizing a CLE event, a webinar, publishing an article in one of the section's publications, organizing a member event. I mean, I can tell you, Emily, you're well aware of the projects I did. You and I coordinated a podcast that talked about the rise of hate crimes. I also submitted an article that was published in Criminal Justice Magazine regarding, you know, considering criminalization of conversion therapy. And then Emily, you and I, actually, you invited me back to the podcast to talk about the substance of that article. And fingers crossed, I hope to have one more project done before my fellowship ends this year. So it really is a great opportunity to use the resources of the section to advocate for issues that you're passionate about and interested in. The fellows are also expected to attend at least 2 criminal justice section leadership meetings annually. These take place across the country. And I think one of the best parts of the fellowship is that the fellowship actually pays or reimburses travel costs for fellows to attend 2 of those meetings. And that is such an incredible opportunity to actually meet people face to face and to sit in on committees and to get a real world understanding of the work that the section does. In terms of the timeline for the fellows, as you mentioned, Emily, we're going to select 2 more fellows this year. The application is available now. It's on the CJS website. The web address is a little long, so I think the easiest way to find it is to just Google ABA Criminal Justice Section Fellowship, and it'll be the first link. The application deadline is the end of July. We will then review the applications and start the interview process with the hope of selecting our fellows around August in time for them to hopefully attend the Criminal Justice Section Fall Institute in mid-November in Washington, D.C. So we actively encourage everyone to apply. It's an incredible opportunity, and we look forward to meeting the candidates.
That's wonderful. And you're certainly a great example for our listeners to hear from and making the most of the opportunity. So really appreciate you joining us to share that with our listeners. So thank you again for us. All right. And so speaking of advocating for issues that you're passionate about, let's turn the time over to Linda. Linda, if you could tell us about how members and or committees or members within the criminal justice section can work on policy that then goes to the Hill on behalf of the ABA.
In my opinion, Working on policy is probably one of the most rewarding parts of being a member of the ABA and a member of a particular section. Policy resolutions can be authored by an individual or a group or sometimes the entire section. And the process is really pretty simple. You literally sit down and write a resolution. It has to have an accompanying report. You send it to me. We'll talk about ways to improve the wording. And there's a certain ABA format that needs to be followed. But that's really easily accomplished. And then it goes to the Criminal Justice Council. We might send it out before council to various committees or to other interested parties who would want to see the resolution and weigh in on it. But it goes to council. It's debated at council. And the author comes often to present the resolution so that we can make friendly amendments or other changes to the resolution. If council approves the resolution, then it goes to one of the two House of Delegate meetings during the year, either in August or in February. So those take place at the mid-year meeting or the annual meeting. And at that time, the House of Delegates has the resolution on the agenda. There's a formal presentation of it. There's a debate. Sometimes there's very little debate. And then there's a vote. And then after that vote, your policy is enacted. It goes on our website. We are in the process of adding to the website of policies a subject matter index to make it easier for the public to view the policies that we have enacted. The most important part of policy development, though, is its impact on the other activities of the ABA. The ABA has a governmental affairs office that does a lot of lobbying at the congressional level, and it cannot lobby for literally anything that the ABA does not have policy on. And so it's really important that we have policy and that policy isn't too narrow so that it makes it or causes limitations on the ABA's lobbying effort on behalf of the legislation in question. We also use policy for amicus briefs. And again, the ABA files amicus briefs in particular cases, but only where the ABA has very clear policy on the legal issue in the case. And so it's really important to have that body of policy and for it to continually be updated. Policies are also, I think, are finally best kind of they're sort of a barometer of what's coming. Often policies precede standards work on the same issue. And so I can give a few examples of some policies where all of these kinds of impacts, or how best to say it, where policies have impacted future development by the ABA. As I said, sometimes individuals will author a resolution, take it to a committee, but even without a committee, the resolution can go forward just on the basis of that author submitting a resolution. A really good example of that was several years ago, a woman who works in the corrections field put forward a resolution about the need for prisons and jails to have a complete assortment of feminine hygiene products available for all women prisoners, not to decide which ones they needed, but to make sure that women had access to everything that might need each month. And that resolution was very instrumental after it was enacted by the ABA. The author, because of her ties in the corrections field, literally went from state to state explaining this resolution to them, explaining the need for them to do a better job with sometimes I think it's only about a 10% portion of their population that is impacted, but it helps to make sure that women have the kind of health products that they need. Another example of a resolution that we just approved at the council level is about second look sentencing. And again, that was a resolution authored by a single individual, Steve Zeidman, who is a law professor at the City University of New York Law School. And he proposed a broad resolution that all jurisdictions should review guidelines and create procedures for there to be an opportunity to review or have a second look at someone's sentence once they've served 10 continuous years of imprisonment. That's a really important step in the criminal justice system to reduce mass incarceration and to more appropriately take a look at whether an initial sentence that was handed down was appropriate. There may be any number of circumstances, including the prisoner's rehabilitation efforts in prison or changes in the law, that would require or make it so much more beneficial for a court to have another chance to look at the initial sentence and alter it in some way. That resolution will go before the House of Delegates in August. And at the same time, the Sentencing Task Force, which is updating the sentencing standards, will take that resolution and use it to create much more specific standards on that subject. So those are a couple of examples of where policy really makes a huge difference. Finally, there's another example that continues to reverberate, and that is a policy that was enacted really by the entire membership of the section as they began looking at it. And it's a resolution to raise or create a minimum age of jurisdiction for juvenile court. Many states have no minimum age of jurisdiction. Other states may have a minimum age that ranges from 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, up to 12. But the Juvenile Justice Committee wrote a resolution setting the minimum age at 12. But the report really supported a minimum age of 14 because of the research that's been done in this area and because of other bodies that have looked at this issue. And so surprisingly at council, there was an amendment to change the minimum age to 14, and that was passed by a very large margin. That policy was passed about a year and a half ago by the House of Delegates. And surprisingly, we've been hearing from states all across the country that really now are taking a good hard look at what they have on the books for minimum age of jurisdiction. And I was just really floored by the amount of reaction that we got. So it says a lot about how states across the country look to the ABA for the policy that is enacted, and it influences their behavior as well.
Those are wonderful examples, Linda. Thank you for taking the time to walk us through that and really the journey of those policies, not just share how they can be, but those examples, bring it to life, give someone a vision of what the possibilities are. So thank you for taking the time to join us. All right. So, and now I guess that leaves the time to me to speak about media opportunities. My name is Emily Johnson. I have been serving as the Senior Public Relations Specialist for the Criminal Justice Section. And the ABA receives a number of media requests, and we turn to the experts that we are familiar with within our membership for those opportunities. So it can also be that we get referrals to people within their networks, but you know, as you build your expertise in various facets of criminal law, then you may be called upon as a member to participate in a media interview. And we get a wide range. Sometimes it's local news, sometimes it's Time Magazine. So you just never know. And so it's great to be involved and active in the section so that when an opportunity does arise, we can think of you and call on you in those moments. There's also social media. We like to highlight accomplishments of our members when there are members that have participated in the media, whether we facilitate it or not. We like to highlight that and make sure we're elevating the work of our members. And also, you know, as committees and task forces put forward work, we promote those on social media. So it's always great to let us know what you've got going on within your committees so that we can help elevate that on social media as well. And then finally, we have a podcast, The Just Pod, which you're listening to now. And this is a platform where, again, we're making sure that we're speaking to timely issues in criminal law. We also highlight the work of the section on this podcast as well. As we become familiar with your work and your expertise, you may be called upon to join us on the podcast to participate in an interview, as many of our CJS members have. Of course, participation in the podcast is not exclusive to CJS members, so you do not have to be a member of the section to participate on the Just Pod, but it's certainly helpful in helping us recognize, you know, where the expertise is and who we can turn to. So, in speaking of the Just Pod, I need to make an announcement today. While it has been my honor to serve as the host of the Just Pod for these first four seasons up till now, it is time for me to leave the ABA and move on. So the podcast will be taking a hiatus until there's someone to take over the role of host. With that said, if you're interested in this role, please apply online. I'm sure, you know, there's many great opportunities and things that I've enjoyed about working in this role. So I encourage you, if you know someone that has an interest in criminal law and works in communications and marketing, to apply. So again, it has been truly an honor to serve as the host of the Just Pod. And I have really appreciated the trust that you've placed in us, myself particularly, in navigating some of these difficult topics and timely topics. You know, we've talked about a range of issues on the podcast here, and appreciate you joining us and joining me on this platform to participate and engage in those discussions. So thank you. And this is my final sign off. So thank you again. And thank you to our listeners for joining us on the Just Pod.